Good afternoon. We're still in chapter 1, verse 4. we'll advance. Okay, in verse 4 it says, and he will be raised above that he is higher than the angels, as the name that is given to him is dearest or treasured than what the angels received. Talking that the name of that was given to Jesus is higher than the angels. In other words, that he has the most precious name of all. Means that the precious name is higher and elevated from anybody else before him, and from all the names above in the heavens among the angels. What does it mean to have a precious name that's higher than the angels, that's on the highest level? What is the name that's the highest of all names? God is a noun. Jehovah, that's the highest name. The holiest name ever revealed to man is Jehovah. Okay, and so when he talks that Jesus has the highest name ever, what is he talking about? The name that's elevated, most precious than everything. If we go to Jeremiah 23, verse 6. Keith, are you on today?
So
Yeah. Jeremiah.
In his days, Judah shall be slaved, and Israel shall dwell safely. And this is his name whereby he shall be called Jehovah, our righteousness.
Okay. This will be his name, that he will be called Jehovah, our righteousness. By the way, in that text, when they say Jehovah, our righteousness, they're talking about Messiah. Don't sit down yet. Now go to 33:16.
In those days shall Judah be saved, and Jerusalem shall dwell safely. And this is the name whereby she shall be called Jehovah, our righteousness.
Okay. Twice in Jeremiah, they mention Jehovah, our righteousness. There is a section that some rabbis are discussing, and they say, and this is his name. He shall be called Jehovah, our righteousness. And they talk about Psalm 21. And in Psalm 21, also there, it mentions Jehovah, our righteousness. Okay?
Psalm 21 and what?
I don't have a verse on it, but I'll tell you in a second. Okay, let's keep it and go forward. Okay, let's go to verse 5. Hebrews 1:5.
For unto which of the angels said he at any time, Thou art my son, this day have I begotten thee. And again, I will be to him a father, and he shall be to me a son.
Okay. To whom of the angels God ever said, You are my son, today I've birthed you? We'll have to go for a second to John's territory. Let's go to Hosea chapter 3, verse 5.
Afterward shall the children of Israel return and seek Jehovah their God and David their king, and shall come with fear unto Jehovah and to his goodness in the latter days.
Okay. When this is written, King David has been dead for quite a few years. So who is the King David they're talking about here?
Christ.
And what will he do? When they realize that he is their king, what will they do? According to that text.
They'll seek him and fear him.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Doesn't Philippians 2 says that we should work out our salvation with fear and trembling? What does it mean? The repentance of Israel and return. What has to happen first, though? For that to happen. Again, in that text, in Hosea. They have to return, which meaning that here Hosea is talking about an exile that will be ending, right? So they will be returned to their land, and there they will be seeking David. And in the end of days, yeah? They will fear and tremble, and they will seek his goodness. Yeah. And so, again, David here, the reference to David is as a Messiah, not as King David himself. Again, in the Book of Brightness, or the Kabbalah, as you would be more familiar to you, it says David was a king in this world. And David will also be a king in the days to come. And on that it was said that he is the cornerstone that was rejected. Yeah, and that's in the Kabbalah. So as you can see, that even they realize that the David, not the one that reigned on earth, but the other David, will be rejected. It will be the cornerstone that they'll stumble all over. And so when you read in Romans chapter 9, verse 31, if you'll turn to there, it says in Israel, it starts with an Israel. It's either verse 31 or 32 to the end of the chapter.
But Israel, following after a law of righteousness, did not arrive at that law. Wherefore? Because they sought it not by faith, but as it were by works. They stumbled at the stone of stumbling, even as it is written, Behold, I lay in Zion a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense, and he that believeth on him shall not be put to shame.
Okay. They will be stumbling over the cornerstone. See, he's combining all the scripture that we have that deals with that cornerstone, but he connects the cornerstone And you can see that Paul had a working knowledge of the text we just read from the book of Zohar, from the Kabbalah. Because he's using it in the exact same way. Okay. So again, the idea that he is elevated because he is the Son and none of the angels or none of the whoever exists around God up there that surrounds him has never been named a son of God. We're continuing to verse 6. And as he brings the honor of a firstborn second time into the world, he says, and all the gods shall bow before him. Yeah, you want to read it in your text?
And when he again bringeth in the firstborn into the world, he saith, and let all the angels of God worship him.
Mm-hmm. It says all the angels of God will worship him?
It does.
Okay. Another problem in translation. David, what does yours over there say in the Greek?
I'll have to look, but it's...
Okay. Okay. Well, it should in verse 6?
Yes.
Okay, how does verse 5 ends with you?
And he shall be to me a son.
And that's it. Okay. So there is a whole section that should read you don't have the whole verse 6 in my text that says, and as he brought the firstborn second time into the world, he said, and all the gods will bow to him. It says, all Elohim, all the gods will bow to him. It doesn't say angels at all. Okay. What? It's not... Okay. All right. Continue to 7.
And of the angels, he saith, who maketh his angels winds and his ministers a flame of fire.
Keep
but
going.
Of the Son, he saith, thy throne, O God, is forever and ever, and the scepter of uprightness is the scepter of thy kingdom.
Okay. So, about the angel, he says, doing his messengers or his angels' spirits. Why does he use that that phrasing of doing his making or doing his angels' making his messenger spirits? Anybody wants to answer that? What do we know about the angels?
They're the servants, the messengers of God.
Yeah, and as far as form, they can take any form. Why can they take any form? Because they're spirits, exactly. And he's doing that, he's using that wording to show that the Messiah is higher than the angels because he's more than just a spirit that can take any form. Yeah? He's contrasting that. And in verse 7, in verse 8, he says, and to the Son he says, you sit, O God, is forever. And the scepter is from the scepter of your royalty or something to that effect. Can you read that again? 8.
But of the Son he saith, Thy throne, O God, is forever and ever, and the scepter of uprightness is the scepter of thy kingdom.
That also comes from Psalm 45. And verse 7.
In our translations, it's verse number 6. And reading from the American Standard of 1901, Thy throne, O God, is forever and ever. A scepter of equity is the scepter of thy kingdom.
Yeah. So this is what the writer of Hebrew is quoting again to show that Jesus is the highest, above all, the radiance of God. And his name is Jehovah our righteousness. That's the highest name that even Jesus receives, because as God put everything under him, as we read yesterday, he inherits the earth with all of God's power in order to be able to control. Let's read now from verse 10 to 12.
And thou, Lord, in the beginning didst thou lay the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the works of thy hands. They shall perish, but thou continuest, and they shall all wax old as doth a garment. And as a mantle shalt thou roll them up, as a garment, and they shall be changed. But thou art the same, and thy years shall not fail.
Yeah. What we just read comes from Isaiah 51 and 6.
Lift up your eyes to the heavens and look upon the earth beneath. For the heavens shall vanish away like smoke, and the earth shall wax old like a garment. And they that dwell therein shall die in like manner. But my salvation shall be forever, and my righteousness shall not be abolished.
Okay. That verse in the Hebrew text is a play on words that's very important. When it says that, look up to the heavens or to the sky and look, because the earth below, and look at the earth below, because the sky is smoke. A smoke will be salted, and the earth as a garment will. What's the word there in English?
Wear out.
Yeah. And also, would the inhabitants be, will die, but my salvation will last forever, and my righteousness. Over there, when they use the words for salt over there, they use a form of the word of salt that, although it's not spelled, it's spelled like salt, but the sound is like they'll become royal, will be royalty. Yeah, and because as the earth will be destroyed, those who will die will die. What will happen with those who will not die? They will rule. In other words, who rules in the world when that happens? Kings, royalties. Yeah, and so when they talk about that it will be salted, they wrote it in a way that sounds phonetically, when you hear it, okay, I'll give you the word. To rule as kings, in Hebrew, the word is imlechu. And what it says here, it uses the word nimlachu, means became kings, but it's not, because the spelling is the spelling for salt. But when you hear it, it's like they became kings. They've been coronated, which is essentially what will happen to those who will get to heaven. Yeah, exalt. Yeah, exactly. Good. It's exactly. But can you imagine saying the word exalt as exalt? That's what is happening there. They'll be exalted. And you get the double meaning. And I think that's beautiful. And that's why I think the writer of Hebrews chose to go to that text, because he was looking for that play on word. Even though it's written in the Greek, like I said, he's quoting for the Septuagint, but he knows that the guys he's writing to, they also know how it's written in the original text. And this is some of the thin understandings we can get when you realize what's happening and who's talking to who and so forth. Read it again, I'll tell you exactly.
In Hebrews or in Isaiah?
Isaiah. Yeah.
Lift up your eyes to the heavens and look upon the earth beneath. For the heavens shall vanish away like a smoke, and the earth shall wax old like a garment. And they that dwell therein shall die in like manner. Mm-hmm. But my salvation shall be forever.
Okay. It says it shall be, after the smoke is in there, it will be waxed.
The earth shall wax old.
Will wax old. Does anybody have different wording in your?
Wear out.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I know. I have that reference. Yeah. Yeah, but I wanted to go first here because only here in Isaiah does he do that play on word of the nimlachu. It means got salted, but also sound like became. To some it will be, they'll become like salt, and to some it will mean completely other things at the same time. And that's what the text is trying to show, that something will happen dynamically, but there'll be two things happening at the same time, and one word can describe the two things, one if you go grammatically and one if you go phonetically. And of course, all of that is still in the, what the writer is trying to do is elevate and persuade them through the things that they already know why it will be a mistake to turn their back on Jesus. Okay, let's read verses 13 and 14.
But of which of the angels hath he said at any time, sit thou on my right hand till I make thine enemies the footstool of thy feet? And are they not all ministering spirits sent forth to do service for the sake of them that shall inherit salvation?
Okay, now here we have something very interesting. For what does God send the angels for? For whom? For the saints. For those who are living according to God's will. We've seen it even before Christ. To whom did the angels appear? To Abraham? To Sarah? To the parents of Samson? Daniel? Jacob? Yeah, Jacob even fought with one. Yeah. So even though it was before Christ, they were still considered God's people. And here we have the wording that says, they are being sent only to help those who will inherit salvation. That's the wording in the text here, that they are sent to help those who will inherit salvation. So basically what these two verses are trying to say is that the sky and earth are nothing in comparison to the Messiah. He is so much higher than the sky and the earth together. We can see in Psalm 110, verse 1,
Jehovah saith unto my Lord, sit thou at my right hand until I make thine enemies thy footstool.
Yeah. So over here we have he's using that psalm to say, to whom among the angels did God ever say, sit to my right hand? Yeah, and he's taking it from that psalm. In other words, he's using that psalm because it was a common knowledge that that psalm talks about the Messiah when David writes that psalm.
Now, is that because of the different words they use there for Lord?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, in the Hebrew it says, my Lord says to my Lord, sit to my right hand. And the king of Israel doesn't have lords above him other than God. And so the first Lord is like the Lord, the God, who is over the king of Israel. All of a sudden he's telling to another Lord that's between God and the king of Israel, sit to my right hand. Yeah, and it was always understood that that psalm talks about Messiah. Till today. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Jehovah says to my Lord. Yeah. Correct. If we go to Daniel 7, verse 13.
I saw in the night visions, and behold, there came with the clouds of heaven one like unto a son of man. And he came even to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And here also Daniel is describing a vision that is in Judaism is accepted as the Messiah. Again, in Jewish writing, there is a rabbi that his name was Saadia. He was a very famous rabbi, and he says, and he commentates about Daniel that that vision that Daniel has is about the Messiah. He outright says that that's a vision of the Messiah. And again, I'm bringing you all those so you see that there is a lot of understanding concerning Messiah within the Jewish understanding. That's very much the way we see and we understand a lot of those texts. And that, once again, the only problem is that they do not understand or choose not to understand. But I think it's more by choosing rather than choosing not to understand that it is Jesus, while we understand that it is Jesus. In Genesis 18:1,
and Jehovah appeared unto him by the oaks of Mamre, as he sat in the tent door in the heat of the day.
Okay. Now, and the Lord appeared to him in Alone Mamre. In actuality, how many showed up to Abraham there in Alone Mamre?
Three.
And then when they leave Abraham, where are they going to? How many arrive to Sodom? How come? Mm-hmm. And so even on that, again, I'll go to a Jewish source, and over there they say okay, it says that the Lord Almighty is putting a king, Messiah, to the right hand, as it is said, as God says to the Lord, sit to my right hand. And they're saying that when what we just read in Genesis 18, he says, and Abraham, he sat to the right hand, and Abraham sat to his left. And the face of Abraham glowed. And he says that the son of my son, Jacob, will be on the right hand, and I will be on the left hand. That's Abraham speaking. That Jacob will be to the right, and Abraham himself will be to the left of Jacob, which is a synonym to Israel. In other words, that Abraham, as he sits there with the Lord or Messiah, he's complaining, and he's saying, how come Jacob will sit to the right, and I will be on the left? Yeah, he thinks that he should be more honored than that. And it says that, and God is trying to calm him, and he's telling him, the son of your son will be on my right, and I will be on your right. And your honor will increase. In other words, the idea that Jacob will sit to my right, that will elevate you, because he is the son of your son, and therefore you should seek comfort in that and not see it as making less of you, because by him being and achieving what he's going to achieve, you will receive more honor. That is what they're trying to say. So again, you see that even in Jewish commentation, they understood that within the three that came to visit Abraham on that day, one of them was the Messiah, which is interesting to find. And about Genesis... In a commentary in the Kabbalah about Genesis, the same situation, there they say that God's speech the Lord says to my Lord, sit to my right hand, concerning the encounter with Abraham. They're saying that a higher level to a lower level, a higher level in comparison to a lower level, is as it is being said, sit to my right hand, that God is combining there the left and the right in order to destroy the armies of those who are worshiping foreign gods. Yeah, that's why there is the play of right and left and right and left, that even though Abraham is sitting to the left there and he's complaining, through Jacob, they all become right, but there is the combination of the left and the right makes it stronger, and that's God's will through these people and through their descendants all the way to the Messiah, because eventually the Messiah will destroy every, what they call in Judaism, foreign work, meaning worshipping other gods other than God. Verse 14.
Are not they, or excuse me, are they not all ministering spirits sent forth to do service for the sake of them that shall inherit salvation?
Mm-hmm. It means that all of the hosts of heaven were made in order to serve God, to go according to his will, without deviating, neither right nor left, but only to serve humanity, to serve, to save those who, to serve those who have been saved. To serve those who have been saved through the Messiah of the God of Jacob. Then those who believe in the name of God and his Messiah, those that inherit the salvation, that is the eternal salvation that has been made by Messiah, that's been made, prepared, and set. And with that, we're finishing the first chapter of Hebrews. And what the writer is trying to do in this whole chapter is to persuade the people to whom he is writing the letter what they will be giving up on if they turn their back. They'll be giving up the radiance of God. They'll be giving up on Jehovah, the righteousness, which is the highest name of Messiah. They're basically, it's almost what we're going to see in chapter 6 when we get there, if we get there, that to those who have been in the light and tasted of the good thing, you know, he's basically setting them up for that. After you realize and you know all these things, what are you doing? In other words, what happened to you? And in the second chapter, again, from verse 1 to verse 5, he's talking about the gospel that was given by the Messiah of the God of Jacob, and trying to prove to them that that gospel is truthful and deserves faith, deserves believing in it. And it deserves for us to believe in it, just like Deuteronomy 6:4 says, with all our heart, with all our soul, with all our might. Because that is the ultimate truth about God and godliness that can lead to salvation. That is what he's trying to do with the first five verses here. And let's read the whole five verses, and then we'll break them down one by one.
Therefore, we ought to give the more earnest heed to the things that were heard, lest happily we drift away from them. For if the word spoken through angels proved steadfast, and every transgression and disobedience received a just recompense of reward, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation, which having at the first been spoken through the Lord, was confirmed unto us by them that heard, God also bearing witness with them, both by signs and wonders, and by manifold powers, and by gifts of the Holy Spirit, according to his own will. For not unto angels did he subject the world to come, whereof we speak.
Okay. Therefore, according to verse 1, the gospel of the Messiah, or the gospel of God, has been given us by the Messiah himself. God has sent the Messiah himself to teach us the most important things that we need to know. And that reminds us the parable of the guy who had the vineyard, right? Because up to this point, God has always sent his messengers to correct the people, to tell the people of the wrongdoings. And what did they do to the messengers? They chased them and killed them. Just like, remember, when the owner of the vineyard, he's sending his people to talk to the workers there, they killed them. And so the owner of the vineyard has no choice, and he sends his own son. And what happens? They kill him too. And that's exactly what he's trying to build on over here. He says, and the day came that God realized that he needs to send the heir himself in order that they'll take it seriously and understand. And therefore, he's telling him, when God sent his own son in order to show you and teach you, that's a quite a high step up from what we have had up till that point. And so God stopped sending prophets, but he sent the highest tool that he had in order to convey to us so that maybe finally we'll pay attention and make the change that needs to be made in order to follow within his will. And then in verse 2, he's talking about the law that was given in Mount Sinai. And if you know, he says that the Torah, the law that was given in Sinai, came by the hands of the angels. And everybody who rebelled against it received the punishment. Of course, the first punishment that they received as the Torah was given was those who went with the golden calf. And from there on, you know, if you didn't keep the Torah while the law was in power, there was an immediate punishment to those who lived not according. And, I mean, we have many lists of what's the punishment against all kinds of different things. So within the revelation of what God expects and wants from us, there was also a punishment that was forced upon you. Why does he say that the law was given by angels? That's interesting. Because we know that Moses went up to God, up to the mountain to receive it. Yet here in that text, he says that it was given by angels and plural. Yeah, and for that, we have to go to Deuteronomy 27:26. Just a second. 33:2. Let's go to Deuteronomy 33:2.
And he said, Jehovah came from Sinai and rose from Seir unto them. He shined forth from Mount Paran, and he came from the 10,000s of holy ones. At his right hand was a fiery law for them.
Okay. So why does he say angels? Because when God gave the law, he came with 10,000 angels. Yeah. Can you imagine what experience it was to sit there and to see God showing with 10,000? No wonder they ran away from the mountain. I think we would have too. It must have been pretty scary. And because of that description, the writer of the book of Hebrews is using that and telling those that the letter is being written that the first law was subject to the angels enforcing it. And we see that too. In verse 3, he's saying, we will not escape even if we delay salvation and grace. He said, how can we escape if we will not pay attention to the heart of the salvation, of the great salvation, that like that has not been said or has not been revealed before. And has been said from the beginning from the Lord, and is being fulfilled for us from those who heard directly from him. And to us, it's being passed through those who heard it in person. Yeah. The first time we heard about God's plan of salvation was through the prophets. You know, it's the prophets, like we read earlier from Isaiah, about salvation. And about from Hosea, we read that King David will be, and they will all be returned to their land, and in the end of days, they will all be looking and awaiting for him with fear and trembling. And so, at first, this truth has been revealed to us through the prophets, but it wasn't enough to cause the people to realize and pay attention and make the change that they need to in order to correct their ways. And the very idea that we got it through many prophets over a long period of time, generations, was done in that way so that it will not be something that came all of a sudden. You know, because usually when something comes all of a sudden and we're unprepared, we tend to reject. I mean, as it is, we have a hard time with new things and new revelations. So we tend to kind of get very comfortable with what we already are familiar with. Whether it's positive or negative, it doesn't matter. You know, once you get used to it, you hold on to it because you don't want to receive something else. It's like to people who use computers, every time there is an update or a new version that comes out, I think we all dread it because now we have to relearn again, and we already have our set ways of how we like to do. And so there is a resistance to new things. And so God knew that, and that's why, you remember in the beginning of chapter 1, he says, I've spoken to you many, many times, again, and not given the whole thing from beginning to end, but parts, in order to prepare us and to build up, so we'll be familiar with the stages and the steps of his plan, as to not to be surprised. And so none of this has come to us in surprise. You know, if you look back, you see that we've been being prepared from the very beginning. Already from the story of Eve and the snake, we've been prepared, because he says that from the seed of the woman, and so on and so forth. We talked about it yesterday. In 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 20, talks about that all this has been planned from the beginning of the world. And therefore, if we will reject or ridicule this good news, our situation would be bleak and even worse than what was before. Go ahead and read it.
Picking up in 19, but with the precious blood as of a lamb without spot, even the blood of Christ, who was foreknown indeed before the foundation of the world, but was manifested at the end of times for your sake.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we got 10 minutes left. Let us stop here, and we'll pick with verse 5 tomorrow. However, do we have any questions? Yes, Steve.
Earlier, you took us to Romans 9. We looked at 31 through 33. The citation there, the latter part of verse 33, where did you say the source for that was?
Okay. Yeah, the Zohar, the book of Zohar, which is the Kabbalah.
Isn't that Isaiah 28:16 there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I gave the interpretation of the Kabbalah to that.
So that was, yeah, that was their commentary on that.
Yeah, okay. It'll be commentary on that.
Clarify. Yeah. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, the Kabbalah commentary to that text, yeah. Anybody else? Well, we did a good job today. No questions. It's it. Yeah.
You referred to some Jewish writings that explain the Son of Man as being messianic. I didn't get what Jewish writings that was. I'd like to take that down.
It's a Talmud.
Mm-hmm. Is there a reference?
Yeah, I do have a reference, but I'll tell you in a second. Yeah, it's in the Jerusalem Talmud. It's in a section that's called Yalkut.
The what?
It's in a section of the Talmud that's called Yalkut.
Yalkut?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Page 44. Yes.
I appreciate you bringing out the disposition of angels and how many angels there were when Moses received the law, and that certainly is a great incentive to stay with the gospel. It reminded me of Stephen bringing that out when he said, you've received the law by the disposition of angels and haven't kept it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's impressive to think that receiving what we have through Christ is even greater than that disposition of angels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was in the Jewish writings that they said that as great as the skies are and as great as earth is, the Messiah is greater than them put together. And so you see what a value. You know, that's a lot of times when I talk to people and they... They want to understand, well, how come Judaism does not accept Christ and stuff like that? And they think that Judaism completely has no idea about Messiah. And I have to always explain to them that if you take the Jewish religion as a religion, if the Jewish religion is a pyramid, then the point of it is Messiah. I mean, everything in the Jewish religion leads towards Messiah. You remember yesterday I shared with you, well, from the beginning of this study, I've shared with you that it's Jewish writings who say that all the prophets and all the prophecies were given concerning Messiah. I mean, the whole point of all the prophecies is to show us Messiah. And like we saw in Hosea, where he talks about David, there is at least 20 to 30 years that David is in his tomb when he says that. But you see it also in Ezekiel. When Ezekiel says, and David, my prince, shall be king, and David will be king over them, and he will be a prince of peace. And when you read prince of peace, it's like totally Christian language, you know, prince of peace. And when that is being written, David has been in his tomb over 100 years, well over 100 years, few hundred years. And so it's definitely not talking about David, the king who was on earth. And again, we saw in the Kabbalah that they say that David was a king on earth, but that's not enough. There will be a David that will be king in the year after. again, talking about the Messiah, and you see the deep understanding. And, you know, for years, as a believer and as a person that really devoted his life to gain knowledge of Scripture so that I can pass it on and teach, especially to my people. I mean, my job would have been a lot easier if I stayed here in America. I mean, my elders who have been my elders from the beginning, from day one, I don't know if they remember, but one day we were sitting in the office here, and one of them, I don't remember which one of the three, said, "We'll be willing to send you anywhere in the world you want." And I started laughing, and I told them, "If I'll choose in the flesh, I'll tell you, send me to Hawaii. But I have to go where God can use me the most, and that's Israel, knowing that in Israel I'll be nothing, nobody." On the contrary, you know, most people, when they really realize that I'm trying to teach people to believe in Jesus, I'm become a very hated figure. And over the years, I've had to go through some painful situations because of that. And so I'm not over there because I'm having fun. I'm over there because I want to be a tool in the hands of God to bring my people to the faith. And in a lot of ways, I feel like Paul in the beginning of chapter 9 of Romans, that if I knew that if I'll give up my salvation, they will come, I will do it. Okay. Anybody else? Yeah.
Ellie, what are the Hebrew words for Lord in Psalms 110 there in the first verse? My Lord, the Lord says to my Lord.
First verse of 2.
In Psalms 110.
Oh, Psalm 110. Mm-hmm. Okay. I know it by heart, but I'll go there just in the case that I'll paraphrase something. Okay, it says, "The speech of Jehovah to my Lord, sit to my right hand."
Could you say it in Hebrew?
Yeah. Neum Adonai le'Adoni, shev le'imini. Adonai is my Lord. But, okay. Okay, in Hebrew, the word Jehovah is spelled like this. Okay, and then Lord is... Okay. If you go with this form, okay, this is Adoni or Adonai, and this is Adon. Adon is sir. When you say sir, is Adon.
So we're using two different words.
Yeah.
What? For Lord and Lord.
Right. No. Usually we use this. You never use the... Because this can pass as singular and as plural. Yeah, you can say Adoni or Adonai.
The first instance, it's the name of God, and the word Lord is...
Yeah, that's what I'm going with that, Charles. Right. That's why I'm doing that, to explain. Now, Jews, when they go in the Bible and they read this, they don't say that. They say Adonai. Adonai.
No.
This?
What we call Jehovah.
Jehovah. Yeah. And so, but this, the root of Aleph, Dalet, and Nun, those are the three letters here, always connotates master, sir, and so on.
Yeah. And if I understand you correctly, the Jews understood that David was talking about the Messiah.
Yeah.
In this passage?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Because the king of Israel was like the highest, the king and the high priest were like on the same level. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was part of the balances that they had within the ancient system. You had the civilian and you had the religious. The highest level of the religious court or religious entity was the high priest. The highest level of the civilian was the king. That's why the king was judging civilian cases. The high priest was judging religious cases. Yeah? There was a separation between state and church in the system that God gave Israel from the beginning.
When Jesus asked the Pharisees about this, who David was talking about, they wouldn't answer him.
That's right, because they knew. They knew he had them. Any answer they would have given that would be a correct answer would have made him right. And so they got quiet. How many times we do that when somebody puts us with the back against the wall, no matter what we're going to say is going to go against us? You claim the fifth. You just sit there. That's what happened there, yeah. Okay, we'll continue tomorrow. Mark is standing and you can't miss it. Back.